Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaHealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm very excited about today's show. It's all about triumphing after a troubled childhood, both how to do that as an adult and also as a parent, how to try to prevent that from happening to your own children. Today's research is showing that many of the troubles adults are having stem from unresolved pain from childhood. Yet some adults go on to lead satisfying, productive lives after experiencing horrendous childhood. So what's the difference between the two? How can an adult recover from childhood troubles, which are still affecting their approach to life today? And how can today's parents spare their children from having to deal with these issues as adults? My guest this week is James Krabiel, who's a longtime educator and professional counselor and has been helping adults deal with many emotional issues by overcoming their troubled childhood experiences and what he calls the magical illusion of childhood, which many people carry into their adulthood. James will share with us some insights from his new book, Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, about how ineffective parenting can set us up for these kinds of challenges later and how these can be overcome or prevented in the first place. Let me tell you a bit more about James Krabiel before we start. He's an educator, author, and a licensed professional counselor and nationally certified cognitive behavioral therapist practicing in Scottsdale, Arizona. Having a beautiful day, he said. He specializes in working with patients with anxiety, depression, the emotional effects of pain management issues, and high-functioning autistic spectrum disorders. He served as a teacher and guidance counselor for 30 years and has taught graduate-level counseling education courses at Chapman University of California. James received his postgraduate counseling training at Northern Illinois University. He's published numerous articles on counseling and emotional issues, and in 2005, he self-published Stepping Out of the Bubble, Reflections on the Pilgrimage of Counseling Therapy from booklocker.com. His latest books, which we'll be talking about, Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth, is from New Horizon Press. And it's about the impact of troubled childhoods on adult functioning. And his website is scottsdaletherapy.net. So welcome to Family First, James.
Randy, thanks so much for having me on your show.
Well, I appreciate you being a guest. So let's start out just by going back to the beginning. What got you interested in becoming a counselor, James?
Well, it was pretty much from a personal perspective. Obviously, many therapists or many people in the helping profession have experienced their own issues, and so that was true for me. I also felt like I had a pretty fair amount of insight when I went into my graduate program of counselor education. I felt like I was doing a good job. I got a lot of positive feedback from people who thought that I was, teachers and colleagues. Once I got into the field of psychotherapy and also worked in the schools as a counselor, I felt like I was doing some meaningful work for people, and it was very productive, and I've enjoyed my career.
That's wonderful. That's really important. So what prompted you to write your new book, Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life?
Well, I saw a lot of people who had, such as I did myself, that were replicating some of the same worn-out patterns of behaving that they experienced during childhood. They would have gone maybe to other counselors. They'd gone and tried other treatment modalities and finally would come to me. And I would find that they would go down the road of maybe trying to positively think their way out of their problems. But I found that it takes a lot more than that. I found that there was these hot buttons that got activated in adulthood that were remnants from childhood behaviors that needed to be rectified. And so as I started working with people, they began to tell me and give me feedback that I was on the right track. I saw that they were experiencing some relief, and they were beginning to move in the right direction.
Well, that sounds very exciting. I know it's one of the most wonderful things about counseling is just to see the lights go on in a client's eyes and know that you're on the right track, that you're getting to the core of their issues. So so what's the magical illusion that you describe of childhood that many people carry into adulthood? What is that? Is that a core idea in your new book, Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life?
The magical illusion is a pivotal aspect to my work. What I see people doing is they come into adulthood and they're clinging to the illusion that somehow their parents will morph and they're going to become these loving, nurturing adults that they've always yearned for during childhood. What I found is that troubled kids perform to please. They do this in order to try to gain the validation and love of their parents. But when it's not forthcoming, kids tend to turn their anger on themselves. And they come to an assumption, that is, that they are defective, that there must be something wrong with me. This way they can let their parents off the hook. And so it's a pivotal in the sense that it's very important as I work with adults to be able to tell them that it never was about you, first of all, that it was always about your parents. And secondly, that your parents may never give you what you want and what you need. And so there's a need to grieve that, to learn to let that go and to move on beyond that. Because if people cling to that illusion, they carry it into adulthood in terms of their current relationships.
So they blame themselves when their parents weren't able to give them what they needed as children.
Yes,
so
they make this understanding interpretation you right. That if their parents weren't loving, if they weren't caring, if they weren't there for me, there must be something wrong with me. I must have done something wrong. And so what children do is they double their efforts to try to get that admiration and validation. They'll try X, they'll try Y, they'll try Z in order to get what they need from their parents. Some kids will be overly compliant. Other children will act out in response to their parents' absence, emotional absence. And then in that regard, they keep trying, but at some point they say, I'm not getting what I want. And then on some level, they feel like there must be something wrong with me. I must have done something wrong, terribly wrong, to make it be this way.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. It reminds me of very early on a workshop I did many years ago, and one of the participants, he said that he was over 50 years old, and at the time I was younger than that, and he said that he had always thought that there was something wrong with him, that he didn't love his mother. And as a result of my workshop, he said he suddenly realized that his mother hadn't loved him. And it was just what you're saying, a totally pivotal discovery that his parents had let him down. He hadn't let his parents down.
That's exactly right. And it is pivotal that there's an emotional, almost a release. I've seen adults, when I bring this to their attention and I explain to them how they use these coping strategies in childhood in order to survive, and that they needed those coping strategies, but those strategies never helped in terms of bringing their parents closer to them. And for them to understand that it never was about them, that it wasn't their fault, that they didn't do anything to create the problems that were going on and that exist into adulthood, that there's a tremendous amount of relief. Sometimes tears would flow as they felt like, wow, you know, I didn't create this.
For sure. And it's such a big deal now with so many parents getting divorced, trying to make sure that the kids don't blame themselves for that.
Yes, that's a huge issue. And sometimes, you know, parents do that right. Divorced parents, sometimes they don't appear to be committed to the well-being of their kids, because I call it, you know, when does the marriage end after the divorce? You have two parents, they're still clinging and holding on to each other in ways that are destructive. And in that process, the kids feel this sense of split loyalties, because you don't have two parents that are really emotionally committed to those kids. And sometimes you have, when they are committed to the children, you see a lot of over-functioning. You see parents that enable their children, that have a difficult time setting appropriate boundaries with their kids after divorce.
Surely. And another aspect of trying anything to get back that love and support that they didn't have from their parents, how does that relate to kids that get into bad habits like, you know, drinking or being loose sexually or doing poorly in school?
Well, like I say, the acting out kids, they will do whatever they think it will take to get their parents to pay attention to them. And I've had kids that have acted out. And specifically, they weren't aware of exactly what they were doing, but they forced their parents into therapy with the child in order to rectify problems that were going on within the family system. So many times I see a child that maybe I label them as the identified patient, but in reality, the problem is about the metaphors and the dynamics that are going on within that family. And kids will go to all kinds of extremes in order to get their parents to pay attention to them. But sometimes, even then, they don't get it.
Right, yeah. And I've often said, you know, bad attention is better than no attention from a child's point of view. So what you've described a few of the negative interpretations adults internalize. Can you expand on that idea? Because that's so central to the way you're helping these parents.
Well, what I try to do is I tell people, it's not just about thinking differently. It goes beyond that. It's about teasing out what I call these kind of unwritten rules, or these core assumptions that children bring into adulthood. For example, I'll have people who are just lack assertiveness. And their mantra is, you know, I must avoid conflict at all costs. And that may have been because either their parents were always at each other's neck, or it may have been because their parents didn't pay attention to each other and they were emotionally just sterile. But regardless, you know, a child picks that up. It's caught rather than taught. And they carry that assumption into childhood or adulthood. I must avoid conflict. And how does it get played out? Well, it gets played out in terms of how they promote understanding with others. It has to do with their ability to be assertive, to set clear boundaries, about to being appropriate in terms of with others, not overly pleasing other people. And you know, I have a client that I'm currently seeing, and they're having a difficult time. Actually, it's a joint father and mother, and they're coming to see me, and they have a 17-year-old that's got some real boundary issues and problems. And the conflict is the father will not step up. He just doesn't want a parent. He's in cahoots with the kid, and he wants to be his friend, and this pattern has gone on for years. And as we look back at his childhood, there's this reflection in terms of when he was a kid, his parents just weren't there for him at all, and they were linked up with his older brother who was an acting out, just really had huge problems. And so here he comes into adulthood feeling like he was ignored and wanting to make sure that his youngster never gets ignored. But he overfunctions on behalf of his child because he's never learned any boundaries as a child at all. And so he just keeps creating this same conflict because he won't set any consistent limits for his youngster.
Oh, that's fascinating. It's a great example, and it really shows how when you think you're avoiding the problems that you had, you may go to an opposite extreme and create the same kinds of problems. I love your phrase, caught rather than taught. It's unspoken, untaught lessons that kids pick up just from the way the family dynamics are working. It's fascinating. I do want to talk, we're coming up on a break, but I want to explore why some adults do get past these troubles and why others aren't able to break out of it and where counseling can be a fit there. So just to get started, what is the difference between adults that manage to lead productive lives and others who don't as a result of these backgrounds? Because you can't tell from listening to the stories of the childhoods who's going to make it and who isn't.
Some adults process their past. And it's my job to help them to process this. And by that, I mean, number one, to be able to emotionally experience the full impact of what happened to them. And a lot of people don't want to do that work. They're more prone to want to bury it through intellectualization or obsessing or just deflecting things that happened to them. Or they'll tell me everything was great in their childhood, and as we talk further, as they begin to explore it, it's like, oh, by the way. And then these stories come out, sometimes horrendous, about experiences they had, and they don't even know or experience the full impact of them. In the case of this gentleman I just mentioned with his wife.
James, can we hold that and just we'll take the break and pick up with that story afterwards. So stay tuned. It's going to be a lot of great information coming up.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're talking about triumphing after a troubled childhood. And my guest is James Krabiel. He's a licensed professional counselor and certified cognitive behavioral therapist practicing for over 30 years. His office is in Scottsdale, Arizona, and he's just published his second book, Triumphant, A Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life. And we've been talking about the what he calls the magical illusion that parents adults had picked up during their childhood, that somehow their parents were perfect and they end up blaming themselves and acting out or becoming repressed because they're still trying to be perfect, to get that parental love that's not coming. And just before the break, we started talking about why some adults can overcome that kind of internalized message and others don't. So, James, you were just starting to give us an example of how some adults are ready to experience those emotional traumas and get past them, and others bury them, deny them, set them aside, and act out from these internal assumptions. So can you continue with that story you just started?
Yes, again, I go back to a gentleman and his wife who came to see me who have a 17-year-old child. And there's a conflict in the marriage over the parenting of this 17-year-old. And the mother tended to be overly active in terms of at times being annoying or being anxiously irritating, but the bigger problem was with the husband, who tended to be passive and underfunctioning, and was terrified of confronting his 17-year-old over any issues that needed to be addressed. And so the issue is processing. You know, how do we process? Well, one of the issues that I had done with him was to try to get him to see the emotional impact of how he was parented. The fact that nobody was really there for him. In fact, when he was 15 years old, he remembers taking a ride on his bike, and he basically, it was his birthday, and there was no cake, there was no celebration, there was no anything. And in talking to him about this, it was extremely painful. And then I began to talk about the kinds of issues that got activated because of that. And one of them was that he wanted to avoid conflict because his brothers were extremely out of control. So here he was, passive and compliant. His brothers are out of control. And so I was trying to get him to understand that, you know what, you want to avoid conflict with your son. And that's a reflection of what happened to you as a child. Well, he acted like he got it, but he kept falling back on this need, being terrified to set any limits and boundaries for his 17-year-old. And it's a progress in work until he gets to the point where he really understands that he has to work through this fear that he has about confronting situations and asserting himself.
And it's hard when the child is already 17 because he's probably the same size as his father. So it's good to get a hold of this a little earlier. But it's never too late. I always say it's never too late to develop a better relationship with a child. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, it's never too late. And that's what I'm trying to show him now. He had had a, what I call a nurturing relationship with this youngster throughout his younger years and early adolescence, but it got to the point where the kid was really kicking up his heels and creating some problems, and he needed to step up, and he says, I've never done this. I don't have any skills to do this. Well, where would he have learned this? His parents never had any they were never a role model for being tough love, you know, stepping up and asserting themselves and setting limits and boundaries that were appropriate.
Right. So he has to learn that fresh from someone with your skills. So what are some examples, some other examples of ineffective parenting that adults have brought along with them, so to speak?
Well, what happens with, I see with ineffective parents is they do generally one of two things. They either overfunction, so they live their lives out vicariously through their children in many, many ways. Maybe because their own lives as children were empty, or they weren't successful, or they didn't have a lot of play. Or they underfunction, meaning that they're not emotionally available, that the parents are in no way are able to provide the kind of nurturing and care and support that kids need. A lot of parents are just caught up in their own problems. They're just self-absorbed. They have so many problems of their own that they have nothing to give. Then you have parents who self-medicate. And so, you know, that's really, really difficult on kids because their environment is so unpredictable. And then, as I mentioned earlier, you have divorce situations where if the parents don't get their act together and have a united front with their kids, there's these split loyalties where the kids don't know, you know, which way to turn. So all of these things, you know, factor into problems with parenting.
For sure. Well, the overfunctioning, we hear a lot about the helicopter parents that are on the job interviews with their kids or complaining to the college teachers that they should have gotten better grades. Is that an example of the overfunctioning that you're talking about?
Yes. I had some parents that came in. They wanted me to work with their 17-year-old child. Again, it's 17-year-old, and he was a quarterback on the football team, and the father said to me, I want you to deal with performance anxiety? And I said, yeah, I can deal with performance anxiety. And he said, oh, I want you to work with my kid. I got done with him, and the boy comes in, and I meet with him, nice, nice gentleman, nice young man, involved in a lot of different activities at school. And I said, you know, what's up with the football thing? You know, your father wants you to be able to get on the varsity. You're currently on the sophomore team. And he says, I don't care whether I play football or not at all. He says, I have no interest. I play lacrosse and I play hockey, and I prefer those over that. And
my
so
goodness.
Here I was dealing with this youngster whose perception was totally different than the parents. And the parents had this notion that somehow the child, you know, wanted or needed to be the varsity quarterback, and that I could help him with his performance anxiety. When I dealt with the parents after I met with the child and I told them what had happened, they were aghast. They didn't believe me. They thought that I was lying to them. And they walked out of my office and never made another appointment.
Isn't that something? Yeah, some you just can't get through. They'll shop until someone sees it their way.
Exactly. I felt very bad for this child. This just was not right.
No. Well, that keeps you passionate about doing what you're doing, for sure. So there's what you said about being self-absorbed with the economy the way it is. I think even more parents are just, stretching themselves too thin. They've got a third part-time job or whatever. They resent their children wanting to buy another gizmo. And then, of course, like you said, the self-medication, I think that's becoming more and more of an issue. And I'm interested that you mentioned that as one of the ways that parents are withdrawing from their children. So can you elaborate a little more on that, James?
Well, with the self-medication, the unfortunate part about that is that it's not only that it's a problem for kids, that they feel they're in an environment where there's this conspiracy of silence, because the parents will generally protect that situation. The kids don't know what to expect, so they're highly anxious about when the next time dad's going to come home drunk, or, you know, when mom's going to be using her pills, and what's going on. So there's this unpredictable nature, and what I've found is that the kids end up being the confidant or the parent to the parents, and this is highly troubling to me, that they're thrust into this role, children, of actually caretaking for an adult. And so that's a huge problem. The other aspect is then when these children go into adulthood, if they don't again process their past, they end up replicating the same behavior and end up self-medicating and using alcohol or drugs in their own lives, unless they are at the point where they are so angry and so frustrated with what they experienced as children. So again, it comes down to the aspect of, do you process your past? Do you understand the full emotional impact of it? Do you get that? Do you work towards experiencing that? Or do you victim posture and say, well, poor me, this happened to me and I can't help it. And then you end up, you know, doing the same things that your parents did, or you end up just blowing it off and acting like, you know, these experiences never happened to you as a kid. And once again, you end up actually replicating the same behavior, doing the same things that your parents did.
Yeah, that's so critical to recognize when you're replicating, even when you think you're running from the patterns you had as a child. It's easy to fall into the same patterns. So let's move on to the positive parenting. How do you show people that middle way between overfunctioning and underfunctioning to really, you know, positive functioning as a parent?
Well, that's one of the reasons I put a chapter 6 in my book. I put a whole chapter on parenting because I thought, you know, hey, it's important that adults, if they didn't grow up in families where there was appropriate parenting, to understand what it looks like. And what I've seen is that good parents, parents that are effective, are involved with their children to the level that they can be, that the most important ingredient is the level of involvement that they have a good emotional connection with their kids. Because I believe that all discipline is derived out of the level of involvement, not the other way around. Many people think that, well, if I tell my kids how to act, if I pontificate, if I lecture, if I moralize, if I give them advice, they ought to, you know, just take it. But if they're not involved, if kids are not involved in your life, if they're not connected, they're less likely to accept the kinds of restrictions, mandates, consequences, whatever we put on them. It's important to be nurturing and caring and to be supportive. That doesn't mean we always praise our kids over everything. It just means that we encourage them, that we're there for them, that we have a vision for them, that we help them set goals for their future. It's important that we affirm our kids. We let them know when they're doing the right kinds of things. We're very good at telling our children when they're not doing the right things. But it's very important that we tell them when they're doing the kinds of things that we're proud of. I'm especially proud of children who are civil. By that, I mean, I love it when I hear stories from parents who tell me their children are involved in volunteer types of efforts, or they started some volunteer type of effort and have created that kind of kindness, or that their children at school will befriend or support or advocate for a special needs youngster. I get excited about that because I think that's the kind of thing we need to build in for our, to build into our kids.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because they're passing on that sense of caring for others that they are getting from their good parenting of their parents. That makes a lot of sense. It's a sign that they have that love to give because they've had that example from their own parents. Is that right interpretation
and,
of what you're saying?
In society now, incivility is rampant, and I believe it starts in the families where if children are constantly seeing a parent bully another parent, their mother or father, and there's those kinds of aggressive, hostile behaviors are going on. They learn that this is okay. They learn that they can extend that and take that kind of behavior into the schools or whatever, wherever they are. And it's not okay.
Good. Yeah, they often say that the victim becomes a perpetrator if he doesn't know any other way of behaving.
Exactly. Then that's what happens with the bullying, I believe, in our schools. Good parents use coaching as discipline. They don't just say, I want you to do this or I want you to do that. Particularly with young kids, I always encourage parents, look, sit down and coach them. Tell them how to do it. You know, if you want them to put the toys away, sit down with them and share the experience of how it is that you want them to put their toys, you know, in a basket or in a bucket or wherever you want them to do that. So it's a matter of coaching kids on how you want. If you want them to wash the sink, you know, show them what it is you want. You know, coach them with it, encourage them in terms of how you would like to have that experience accomplished. And set clear boundaries with your kids. And if they do the right things, give them positive reinforcement. If they don't, set appropriate consequences. Make them reasonable.
Right, and the kids don't. What you said earlier about just telling them what's wrong, they don't really know what's right unless you're demonstrating it by example or giving them positive feedback of, oh yeah, I like the way you put your toys away. If you don't say that, they're in the dark. Everything's trial and error and they just, get disciplined without getting any of the affirmation. So that's a really important point. So we're coming up on another break. But I want to talk some more about what are the signs and characteristics that you see in adults that demonstrate that they need this kind of introspection about their own childhood experience, the long-term effects that you can see in adults, and it will affect their parenting if they become parents. So, when we come back from the break, I want to explore that, and I also want to make sure that our listeners understand how cognitive therapy works and how to get in touch with you. So we'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun?
Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
The Total Education Network is the only network that airs shows 7 days a week on various stations. Please go to our website, www.TotalTutor.org, for more information about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide educational news and tips for parents. The Total Education Network, the talk shop for parents, teachers, and administrators. That's www.TotalTutor.org.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. Our guest today, James Grabiel, has his new book called Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life. And we're talking about how adults who have various problems in their behavior and their emotional life often need cognitive therapy to get back to their troubled childhoods, which they may even be in denial about, and how our guest James can help them with counseling to reprocess the pain from childhood so that they don't fall into what he calls the magical illusion that they are inadequate in some way and have to overcompensate. So we were just talking about the patterns of healthy parenting and ineffective parenting and positive parenting. And I wanted to talk some more, James, about some of the signs and characteristics that you see in adults that are troubling them enough to come to you for help with these lingering assumptions from their inadequate childhoods?
Okay, generally when people come to me, obviously they're in crises. So they've experienced something generally in terms of relationship that's just they've lost a relationship, they've some crisis has happened. And so I'm dealing with this presenting issue, and my goal is to tease out what are some of the assumptions that they operate under that are remnants from childhood. That's eventually where I want to go when I deal with them. Obviously, at first, I want to listen to their presenting problem. I want to hear them out in terms of what's going on for them, try to give them comfort, try to give them soothing, try to affirm them to the extent that I can. Let them know that we have a collaborative, trusting relationship. Build all of that. But as I do that, at some point, I want to begin to look at what are some of the assumptions that are creating problems for them. I find that a lot of people carry with them a tremendous need to please others. I must please and perform admirably at all times. And so my job is to try to modify that, to help people understand they don't always need approval. It isn't necessary. It's not required. If we have significant people in our lives, our family, who love us and care about us, that's certainly sufficient. I find that a lot of people who have difficulties with relationships in adulthood have a tremendous amount of self-doubt. They lack confidence. They hear the echo of their spouse in their ear, and they begin to believe some of the things that sometimes are not helpful, that are self-defeating, that are demeaning, sometimes are negative. I find that these adults lack emotional ability to disclose emotionally, that there's a blind spot, that there's a block in terms of their ability. And maybe because when they were children, they were told to be quiet, that they were never given a voice in the family. And so they never developed any kind of assertiveness skills. And so my job is to try to teach them to be more assertiveness. If there were no clear boundaries set in their childhood, they're going to come into adulthood, and in terms of particularly how they deal with their spouse or their children, they're going to falter in terms of their ability to say no, and this is not for me, or I don't want to be a part of that, or this doesn't make sense for me. And so there are a lot of issues like that that I began to try to extrapolate in counseling, and I began to start working with the patients on, okay, how do you build assertiveness? How do you build confidence? How do you give up some of your need for approval? How do you let go of your fear of intimacy? And this is what I think is important in terms of the counseling process for adults.
Yeah, it sounds very powerful. So what does the triumphant life look like? And you chose the title, Troubled Childhood Triumphant Life, and that's very assertive. I love it. So what does that look like? James.
Okay, I think that the people, when as I work with them, what I'm looking for, my goal, and what I would expect from people, say, number one, they feel empowered. They feel like they're in control of their own life. They don't feel, I had a woman yesterday told me, I just feel swallowed up. I feel like I don't know myself anymore. And I said, so you've given all your power away to your partner? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, I appreciate your honesty because we can work on that. We can help you get your power back. They develop new relationships. And so people will create a new and more enriching relationships. They learn to assert themselves. They learn to express their feelings more appropriately. They can lighten up and forgive themselves for being less than perfect and making mistakes. They can parent more effectively. They can establish more rational behavior. They handle conflict more effectively. They just trust life, and they can learn to be comfortable with their own aloneness. They don't cling, and they learn how to live in the moment. These are what I would consider to be the qualities of someone who's moving towards the direction of a triumphant life.
That makes a lot of sense, and I love the focus on being comfortable within themselves without being perfect, and having trust in their own future as well as in the relationships they're cultivating, and being able to stay in the moment rather than being overcome by fears of the future or guilt from the past and that kind of thing. That's very powerful. It sounds very triumphant. So could you describe a little more about the cognitive therapy that gets them there?
Well, I think I look at three things. I look at what I call automatic thoughts. This is just the flow and stream of thoughts that people have about life in general. So I'm looking to see, okay, what are they saying about themselves? People will call themselves stupid. They'll say, that was ridiculous. I'm ashamed of myself. There's different ways in which people will say disparaging, self-defeating. I had one patient who has tremendous problems with chronic pain. And his thing was that he was constantly saying, I'm so angry at myself because I didn't go on disability 30 years ago. And I'm thinking, 30 years ago, it's over. You can't do anything about that. And I said, by being angry about it, it only contributes to your pain. And so,
right.
That's what is really important, is to get people, thinking about that cycle. The other aspect is what I call cognitive distortions. Cognitive distortions are the lenses out of which we look at reality. When we personalize, when we magnify, when we catastrophize, or if we have either-or thinking, I'm always greater than most people, or I'm always just this horrible schnook. So we go from one extreme to the other. But the most important thing is that we focus on what I call core schemas, that I look at what are these issues that we can tease out of a person's life that have been generated through their childhood. There are issues about pleasing. There are issues about avoidance. There are issues of fear of intimacy. There are addictive kinds of thinking and behavior. There are passive-aggressive behavior. Their inability to assert themselves or set clear boundaries. The avoidance of conflict. All these things I look at and I say, all right, these are what are driving and activating the negative behavior in adulthood. And that if we can get the patient to look at that clearly and begin to change the dynamics of that thought, those thought processes, to make adaptive change, then we're on the right track, and that's my goal, ultimate goal, is to get people to think differently about those core assumptions.
Sounds really good. So what does the process look like? We've talked a lot about process from the client's point of view, the patient's point of view. What's their process that they're going through to deal with the pain that they're bringing along from the past?
That's a good question. They come in with a presenting issue, and there's a lot of emotion wrapped around that. They begin to share that issue with me, and I begin to collaborate with them and listening to them, and I tell them as much that we're on this journey as sojourners. We're fellow passengers trying to solve a problem, trying to look at this. At some point, as we begin to look at what the relationship issues or what the problems are in the here and now, I begin to work with them about some of the ways that those problems got generated. And generally, people will say, yeah, this is what happened in my childhood, or this was a problem that came up earlier in my life. There's some kind of chronic issue that's come up. Sometimes it's in early adulthood. And then we begin to tease that out, to look at it and see, okay, what are the assumptions behind that? And part of that is for people to get the full emotional impact of what they experienced, that they used certain coping strategies as children, but it just wasn't good enough to change things. And so part of it is that they have to swallow the bitter pill, meaning that they have to understand that the way things were as a kid, it was never enough. It was never good enough. The way their parents dealt with them was never enough. So there's a lot of grieving. There's a lot of releasing. There's a lot of disclosure about what happened to them. Once the disclosure part is managed and handled, then they can get to the point where they can begin to change some of the assumptions that they've made about life. They can begin to look at their life in a different light. They can begin to change the way they think about things, the way they feel about things, and move forward.
That's very powerful. And so then that comes full circle, where if they can understand the assumptions that have put them in this emotional spot with their present crisis, then that can resolve. Sometimes it could resolve itself. Isn't that true?
Absolutely.
Done this process?
Yes. And I don't know that, you know, people are able to do this process. They don't necessarily have to go to therapy to do it. In my book, I've given chapter helps to people where they can do exercises that help them to flush out a lot of the emotional baggage that they've experienced and try to chart a new course. So, yeah, people can do this stuff.
That's great. I love your subtitle too, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth, that you can heal. So how would listeners learn more about your work, James? Your website is scottsdaletherapy.net, and do you do long-distance counseling?
Yes, I do Skype, and I do phone counseling if people want to reach me. If you go to my website, there is an email address on there. I welcome people contacting me. In fact, if you contact me and you tell me you want a copy of my book, I'll be happy to try to provide you with a complimentary copy of it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and I welcome the calls. If you Google my name, James Krabiel, you'll find I've written numerous counseling-related articles. They're all available. I welcome the feedback, and if people want to contact me and they're interested in counseling via phone or Skype, I'd be happy to make that work.
And I'm going to spell your last name because it's unusual, Krehbiel. And thank you so much for being on Family First, James, and good luck with all your books.
Randy, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.